Hello, this is John Brown and Federico from Mobilize.net, and we're going to talk today about how to get legacy apps up to DevOps so that you can start getting all the advantages of that. So here's what we're going to cover. DevOps is a pretty exciting stage in software development today, and we'd like to tell you a little bit about why we think it's a super important thing for you to embrace and talk about maybe what's blocking your adoption, what some of the alternatives are from a technology standpoint to get to DevOps, and then open up the floor for Q&A. So let's talk about why DevOps is interesting. It's really transforming software development. From that standpoint, how come everybody's not using it? Well, what do we mean when we talk about DevOps? There are a few things that are pretty much standard when you talk about DevOps. One thing is that you will see that you have automation for the build process and the publishing process and the QA process. You have the ability to monitor the health of the application, the usage of the application, and some other things. You see that typically it's going to remove the silos between development and operations, just like we've historically now with Agile removed a lot of the silos between user or product owners and development and QA. And like Agile, we see typically with DevOps that we co-locate the staff that's doing the development with the staff that's responsible for operations. We are definitely going to move towards continuous integration and continuous delivery, and it almost has to be Agile and Scrum type software development. If you think about the old way that we develop software for on-premise, it typically was a very long cycle time, 18 months to 3 years. We like to joke that, you know, we were code complete, but then it took 6 months more coding to get the final release candidate. So obviously we weren't code complete. And so this really prevented us from being agile. Let's talk about the difference between on-premise and SaaS. You know, the time is really the key thing here, because as I said a moment ago, code complete really wasn't code complete, was it? Because there was still months and months of more code to write. And if we found a bug after release, and in my experience that was always the case, is that no matter how hard we tested, there was always bugs that popped up right after you shipped. And now those bug fixes were a release away, and typically that's going to be months minimum, even if you're just trying to do a patch, because the cycle was so slow. And because the cycle times were so slow, the agility of the company to respond to user requirements or market demands or changing technological profiles was really difficult. So it really blocked the agility of the company to be responsive. It was really difficult to get customer feedback and integrate it into the product. If you think about the world of on-prem software, typically after we shipped it, we would try and marshal some customer focus groups, try and find people that had actually upgraded to the new version and had spent some time getting used to it. So now you're weeks from your release point. Then you have to collate all your customer data and then put it into some kind of new requirements or features and specifications for the next version and then integrate that. So it was just huge in terms of the time cycle to do it. And of course, there's no SaaS, there's no software as a service when you have on-prem. You can't really implement a subscription model very easily. You can't deliver that, you know, the updates on a very frequent basis that you can when you're hosting the application. Federico, I know that you've spent a lot of time talking to our customers, so maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about what I call the ISV dilemma here.
Sure. Thank you, John. You know, the ISV dilemma is when you have ISVs that have made their life with on-prem applications and using the standard software licensing model, where they charge some amount upfront and then some minimal maintenance, typically in the 15% range, on an yearly basis from there. These guys, they really want to take advantage of the power of the cloud and of the SaaS business model. And to do that, they need to modernize not only their application, but also the way in which they develop and deploy these applications to market. And nowadays, everybody expects to have almost daily or weekly releases. I mean, just look at the apps on your phone. It's always, it's constantly asking you to upgrade the applications, and that is what users have are expecting nowadays. So you cannot continue with the old practices and having releases every few months or sometimes even years. You have to be able to be very agile and develop and deploy very quickly. And this is where, DevOps and a modern architecture for your applications is really important.
Great, super. Yeah, so one of the things that we've heard from some of our customers, AgWorks comes to mind, for example, that we'll talk about a little later. But if you remember, when they came to us, they had tried to rewrite their Visual Basic application as a web application, and they were just, it was just taking so long that they were getting hammered by their competitors because of the time it was going to take to rewrite that from a desktop to a real web application. So when we talk about that, I think all the ISVs that I've talked to over the last few years that still have desktop software say, we've got to get on SaaS. And I know you've got some experience with that, Federico. Do you want to relate to maybe what you've heard from customers?
Yes. So, John, as you know, we specialize in helping companies migrate their legacy applications into a modern web architecture that can be deployed in a cloud environment, and therefore it enables the SaaS business model. And, whenever one of these ISVs comes to me and tells me, so we started a rewrite, but it didn't go very well, I know that they're ready for us, because as you said, rewrites always tend to fail, and it's not like they fail in replicating the functionality that it already exists. It fails, they fail because typically the software is not documented anywhere else but in the actual source code. And these applications have been developed over many years, and the functionality is there. The lines of code represent real business value, and if you start from scratch, you really have to go back to requirement gatherings, and then developers, they always want to work with the latest and greatest technologies and the latest and greatest features, and so they tend to start the redesign of the application with some new features and with some bells and whistles, and they forget that the original source code had years and years of bugs fixing, of exception handling, of small little business rules that are really, again, not documented but are embedded in the software. And so this is why rewrites fail. They fail because of the scope creep. They fail because organizations tend to have a very short memory with respect to the cost of developing software. And I always ask them, so how long ago did you start to develop this application? And they tell me, I don't know, 10 years ago, okay? And on average, how many people did you have on this team, on the team to develop the software? And they tell me, a certain number, let's say 5 people. Okay, so 10 years, 5 people, you have 50 man year, invested into this application. And then they say, and then I ask them, and how long do you plan, to take to rewrite this application? And they say, well, I can do it with a team of 3 people over 2 years. And then, when they do the math, it doesn't add up. But they tend to have a very short memory, and this is why, we need to remind them that it is not that easy to migrate software, to rewrite software. And this is why an alternative like what we propose, and that we will talk about it later, actually makes a lot of sense, because we can recover the business rules that are embedded in the application, and we can easily put them in a modern web architecture where they can take advantage not only of the SaaS model, but also of the DevOps, and they can streamline their whole development and deployment process.
Great points. One other one that I would mention is just the whole version and configuration stuff that, I remember when I was working at Microsoft, we would have these huge rooms just full of racks of computers that were running different configurations on every release that we did, just to make sure that it didn't break. You had different versions of the OS, different versions of DLLs, you know, different versions of components, different hardware configuration. It was just a mess. And, of course, you couldn't force people to upgrade from one version to another, right? So just because you released it didn't mean that everybody was on the same version, and that made life sometimes a nightmare as well. So SaaS, you know, solves all of those problems. And I think that's why you don't see a lot of new vertical market software being released as desktop unless it's, you know, really captive to a piece of equipment like a piece of machinery or something like that. So, you know, one of the things that people tell me is like, well, look, we are using Agile, right? So, of course, we're Agile. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't necessarily shorten those release cycles for your on-prem software. And a great example for that is Visual Studio, because they have, you know, Visual Studio, which is your desktop version that runs on Windows. And it's a great product. You know, VS 2017 is the current version. But they also have Visual Studio Online, which is a little different product. It's more of a team collaboration tool, but with Visual Studio, they're the fastest that they can cycle this thing is quarterly. So they do an update every quarter. But with VSO, they're updating it every 3 weeks. You know, they're basically doing 2 weeks of development and 1 week of QA, and then boom, it's up there, and they're on to the next sprint. So, as one of the executives on the team told me, you know, a bug fix is never more than 3 weeks away. So what does DevOps get you if you get onto SaaS? So San Guckenheimer, who's one of the executives at Microsoft, made a really great comment about this not too long ago. He said that a DevOps product backlog is really just a set of hypotheses, which then become experiments in the actual software, and that allows for a cycle of continuous feedback. So if you think about those three things, the hypotheses, experiments, and feedback, you really have this ability in the way that they're doing this with VSO and some other products is using feature flags. They can code up something new or a change, and then they can turn that on selectively for a group of users. So you pick maybe a random set of users that gives you a statistically significant number, and then you turn that feature flag on and you track and monitor the usage in real time, because these monitoring tools are very sophisticated now for cloud-hosted web applications. And then when you find out the results of that, if you want, you can then just flip that feature flag into production, and now everybody gets it. And one of the examples that he cited, which I thought was really cool, was when they started out with Visual Studio Online, they weren't seeing as many users as they thought creating new solutions. And so they changed the UI on, I think, the homepage so that it would prompt people to create a new solution. And they did that in first in a limited group, and then measured the results using their usage analytics compared to their default group, the people that didn't have the new UI. And they discovered that that absolutely would get people to create more solutions. So they turned that on. But in each one of these cases, they had all of this data from their online application that they were monitoring that would allow them to go back and understand better what's going on in the application with real users using it in real time. And, you know, you just can't get that in on-prem software. It's just, there's nothing like that. And it's so exciting, I think, to people that are interested in optimizing and iterating their code. So some of these things I just talked about, which is, you know, using CI/CD, your costs for deploying a version just go down to a fraction of what they do with on-prem. Now, you can use CI and CD with on-prem, right? But again, because you're limited to the cycle time that you can actually move things out, you can't patch that software, you know, when it's out on all those desktops every 2 weeks. So you don't really get a lot of those advantages. You certainly can't get the very short cycle time on user feedback that you can with DevOps deployment of SaaS software.
And with the monitoring.
Yeah, go ahead, Federico.
Yeah, what you're telling me is that really to get the benefits of continuous integration and continuous deployment, you really need to have an application that is architected for the web. You know, it's not really that easy to do it with a typical desktop app, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and this is why it is so important, you know, to move applications, you know, from a desktop architecture to a web architecture, you know, as soon as possible, what we were discussing just before, right? You know, so that you can really take advantage of all these new real way of developing software.
Absolutely. And you know, the things that people are, that I'm hearing about people doing with CI and CD are in a lot of ways really amazing. You know, I know you and I have worked on projects that spanned years from one release to another, and some people with web apps using CI/CD are actually putting out multiple releases every day. So every 4 or 5 hours, they're putting up a new version, you know, that's maybe based on a very small delta to the code, but they go in and they make a change, it goes to an automated test suite, it goes to an automated publish, and gets deployed. And then, of course, they've got the ability to roll it back or fix it very quickly if they find a problem. So it's just, you know, it gives you so much flexibility compared to the old on-prem and waterfall model.
Yeah, absolutely. I still remember, you know, one of the worst cases where, you know, for a very large bank that I will not name, you know, every time they had a new release of a certain application, there was a guy that would go around with a suitcase at all the branches, you know, to do the deployment, you know. So, I mean, from that to having, you know, multiple deployments a day, you know, wow, that's a big, you know, advantage.
Yeah, it's a huge change. It's a huge change. Well, what's blocking you from using DevApps if you've got a legacy application? Well, you know, probably the single biggest blocker is that your software is still on-prem. And as long as you're doing on-prem, you're really not able to take advantage of all of these benefits of DevOps. So first, you know, the way I look at it is first you go to the web and then you get to DevOps. But how are you going to get from the desktop to the web?
And that's where we come in. Mobilize.net, which is a company that has been in business for over 20 years, you know, since day one, we've been focused on helping companies make the transition between an old software architecture to a new software architecture. The way in which I describe it is that, you know, at some point, you know, you developed an application, and then over time, you know, you added new functionality, you fix new bugs, et cetera, and the application continued to be more and more valuable for the business. But in parallel, while you were, you know, adding functionality to the application, the technology stack has also evolved. And you probably kept up with the technology stack by upgrading to the latest version of, you know, the development environment or the IDE or the compiler, etc. But at some point, there is a big gap. And the gap that we are seeing today is the gap between, you know, a desktop architecture and a web architecture. And, you know, to move your application from desktop to web is not just a simple upgrade. It's not just changing a little piece of technology. There's a real wide gap of technologies, and that where we come in and where we can help. You know, over the years, we've developed, you know, tools that can automate a big portion of the migration process that allows you to really take an application that was written for desktop and move it to the web and make sure that you retain all of the business logic and at the same time you generate code that is understandable, maintainable, performant, etc. on the new architecture.
Yeah, you know, it turns out it's really a hard problem. You think about going from one desktop platform to another, like for example, you know, as you mentioned, we're deeply into legacy code, and we've had for years tools that would go from Visual Basic 6 to .NET. And it turns out that's a pretty hard problem, but it's pales in comparison to going to from Windows to the web, because when you think about your desktop Windows app, look at all of these things that Windows app has. It's got an authentication mechanism that's built in. It's got local file system. It's got access to the registry. You know, it's got its own private process that can be suspended for modality operations like a modal dialog box. It has all these things that a web application doesn't have, and so you have to figure out how to go around all those problems. And for a lot of people, I think it's just an intimidating challenge if they've got a bunch of code that works on the desktop, whether it's in C Sharp or it's in Power Builder or some other, you know, even Java, some other desktop language. And they're thinking about all these changes, but as you said, we've got these tools that actually automate a lot of that lift and shift and do most of the work, you know, a tremendous amount of the work for you. I wonder if, Federica, if you talk about people that are thinking about the different ways that they can go from the desktop to the web? You know, I've identified three here. Maybe you can discuss the pros and cons of each of these three.
Sure. So first of all, you know, you have to, when you look at an application and you want to decide what is the future for this application, you have to understand, you know, two main things, two main variables. You know, one is what is the technical value of the application, and what is the business value of the application. So if you have an application that is, for instance, if you have an application that is, you know, of low business value, let's say, you know, I don't know, you have some, you know, accounting process or accounting package that is pretty standard. And by the way, it also has some technical debt. The application has some technical debt. Then that is where, you know, you should really consider buying a commercial off-the-shelf application. And by the way, you know, pick one that is for the cloud already so that you're moving in this direction. But assuming that you have an application that is really critical to your business that you cannot easily buy off the shelf, then you have these really three ways to move it to a cloud environment. The first one is the virtualization. So essentially what you're doing is you're saying, I have a desktop application and I don't want to deal with this application really. And so what you do is that you essentially package it up, you virtualize it, and you put it on a server that is running potentially in a cloud environment, and then your users continue to access that application using a remote desktop type of service. And so essentially what you're doing is that you're starting to do some lift and shift to the cloud, but you're not really changing the architecture of the application, and therefore you're not really, you know, getting most of the advantages of having a cloud. Alternatively, you can start from scratch and you can rewrite the application from scratch. But as we said before, unless you have essentially infinite time and money, you know, that is probably a bad idea. Or you can migrate an application using tools like the ones that we offer, where you get the best of both worlds. You know, you're going to end up with an application that is designed to be run in a cloud environment that can take advantage of all of the concepts that we discussed before of DevOps, and at the same time retains all of the original functionality, and it's easily deployable and doesn't have a lot of impact on your end users. So this is what I really see as the options. I mean, you can virtualize, which is, you know, an easy change. And you normally virtualize only applications that are not very valuable and that you probably plan to retire in the near future. You can rewrite, assuming that you know, you have enough time and money, or you can migrate using our semi-automated applications.
Cool. Well, of course, I'm a big fan of migration, not too surprisingly, and so I thought it would be great to talk a little bit about the technological stack that we've built here at Mobilize that we're using every day for customers, both very, very large and even fairly small, to move those desktop apps to the web. And, you know, WebMap is our tool of choice for this, and you can see sort of this on this slide here. We're going from as far back as Visual Basic 6 or Microsoft.net all the way to a really modern application. This is a little code snippet on the left, a VB from a sample app we have that's opening up an ADO connection to an Access database. And on the right, you can see after that code's migrated, it's basically doing the same thing, but it's doing it in a much more sophisticated way. So, architecturally, what we're going to do is create an application that's pretty cool, because it's going to use, on the client side, very modern technologies, HTML5, CSS for markup. It's going to use JavaScript. We're going to use a JavaScript framework to do object and data binding, either Kendo UI or AngularJS with Bootstrap, and that gives our customers a choice of two different look and feels, either Kendo UI for a sort of Windows-like user interface where the forms have objects that are sort of two-dimensionally arranged and they have a deterministic positioning and sizing, or for more sort of responsive and purely vertical design, you can go with the Angular Bootstrap Lashup, and then you get something that works really great on a mobile device where the size of the user interface isn't critical to the layout of the of the form objects. Over on the server side, it's ASP.NET. It's based off the MVC scaffolding, but we're really building a single-page application, so we use a lot of the stuff that you find in Web API. We're using JSON and AJAX to refresh the client side, so it's very performant. We're tracking deltas on the state to make the application not be chatty. It's a very cool framework, and once the application's built with this architecture, we can publish it immediately up to the cloud and deploy it across a server farm and make it work with a lot of different customers concurrently. So a quick demo here, sort of we'll just walk you through what we would see. We want to keep this really quick, and of course if you'd like to see more, we have some live demos that we can show you, or you can watch some videos of the demos. There's a lot going on, so I don't want to rush through it, but I'll show you very briefly what we would do is, even starting with VB6, you're pretty much classic application here. It's a business app that understands things like customers and orders and inventory, and it's forms in front of data. So, you know, there's 13 or 14 VB6 forms, and there's an access database. It's using the standard Microsoft control objects. So, you know, it's a very typical of apps that were built in the 90s around the whole client-server stack. Now, we can go with our Visual Basic Upgrade Companion, which has been around for well over a decade. We can go from that VB6 app to C#, and convert the Forms package over to Windows Forms. We can convert ADO, for example, to ADO.NET. We can convert the controls to the .NET runtime classes that are appropriate. We preserve all the business logic. We preserve all the comments. All the namespaces are familiar. So we can build a Windows app that looks exactly like the VB app, except now it's using a modern language, a modern runtime. You know, you can work on it with a modern development environment like Visual Studio 2017 or whatever. And that's great to get off of legacy code and stay on the desktop, but it's not really what we're trying to do here to get to DevOps. So how would we go from this version of this application to the web? And the answer is we would use WebMap. So with WebMap, basically, you would take that same code base and upload it to our cloud-hosted development tools, and it would modify that code and build a new version that you could download and compile that and run it and start testing. And again, it would be Angular, it would be or Kendo UI. It's going to be straight ahead web application with HTML and CSS and JavaScript on the client side. It'll be MVC on the server side, so now you can start refactoring it to add things like unit tests or to take your old, more procedural code and start selectively building, you know, real classes out of these things and refactoring into the sort of the coding patterns that you wish you'd had 15 years ago when you wrote the original legacy app. Looking at the app now running using the Kendo UI JavaScript framework, we see that we've preserved the UI, but it's running on a browser. I mean, here it is in Chrome, it looks like, running on localhost. And we can even implement some of these MDI capabilities on the browser. So you can deploy this right away to your customers without having to retrain them. Now you've got the agile, quick cycle, web-hosted environment that you want. The code is written in modern languages with modern architecture. So you can start adding and refactoring, and you can build all of these DevOps capabilities into your deployment model, into your monitoring model, and into your marketing feedback model. And you can change your business model to a subscription base instead of a licensing base. So, Federico, if you could, we've had a number of people do this. We've got a few here, like AgWorks and CFM Materials. Maybe you can talk about them.
Sure. AgWorks is an ISV that is focused in the agricultural sector, and they have had a desktop application for a number of years. They actually came to us when they had attempted a rewrite, and it didn't really work out. But thankfully, I mean, we were able to help them move their application to a native Azure deployable application, and they're actually quite happy with the results. Especially because, I mean, they're now, they also were able to make the transition for their developers. Because, I mean, when you move from a desktop to a cloud architecture, you not only have to change all of the tools, but you also have to train your development team in the new techniques. And one of the best way to do this transition is by starting with code that you know, that you understand, with an application that you understand, that has been re-expressed for the cloud. But essentially, is your same algorithm. So the AgWorks developers were very quickly able to just transition to the new source code and continue to evolve and maintain the application there. CFM Materials is is a division of General Electric that focuses on repairing and reselling plane parts, and they had they were managing their whole inventory process in Visual Basic 6. And that, of course, was not sustainable. I mean, having a Visual Basic 6 application in your stack in 2017 is certainly not very good with your IT auditors. And so they decided to migrate, and we helped them with the process. They now have a completely .NET application that they were able to deploy very easily, and they're super happy with the results. The time and money that they spent on the migration is just a fraction of what they would have spent with a rewrite. And then Hotchin Systems. Hotchin Systems is also it's a small ISV that had a typical licensing process. And they were still sending out CDs to their customers until they came to us, and they decided to really modernize their application for the web. And in this case, since the architecture of their application was for a single user on the desktop, as part of the migration process, we also added made the application multi-tenant, multi-user, and they can now really run their business from the cloud as a SaaS model. So another great example of how you can recover all of the business value that is embedded in your source code and essentially inject new life into it and take advantage of all the new technologies advances that we've had in the past few years.
Well, those are great examples. What's next for our customers? Book a meeting with me. You can click on this link. You can book a meeting with Federico. Contact us and ask us whatever you want, and we'll be happy to talk to you about it. We've taken this journey ourselves over the last couple of years from just building on-prem software to really implementing DevOps with CI/CD. We're heavily invested in utilizing these technologies and, quote-unquote, eating our own dog food. And I got to say, it's really been revolutionary here at Mobilize.net from development cycles that were, months and months apart to ones where, every couple of weeks now we're running a new sprint through and we're putting it up into our applications and seeing those changes very quickly and seeing how people adapt to them. So it's pretty exciting stuff for those of us that have been around software for a while to see all these changes. We thank you for sitting through the presentation, and we'd love to hear from you.